Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
So, the Below Deck reunion aired this week.
Yes, and if you guys haven't caught up, you can do that on the Bravo app. So this was another Watch What Happens Live virtual reunion. We're not going to totally recap it today, but any thoughts, Megan, that you wanted to share?
I do, but I'm saving it for my rose.
Oh, okay. Okay. Interesting. I have a couple thoughts too, so maybe I'll just wait to share them when we get to the end.
All right.
Plus, Megan, as you know, a couple weeks ago, I was working on the Real Housewives of Atlanta after show, and it has arrived. So that just launched out of Sunday's episode, which obviously we'll be talking about today, the Bachelorette Dungeon Party. So you can check that out every Sunday on BravoTV.com, and it's available on Bravo's YouTube channel.
Well, wait, give us like a sneak peek. I mean, coming out of this crazy episode, does anyone admit to anything?
Look, I think everyone is still kind of hesitant about admitting to anything. And that includes Candy. And we'll get into this a little bit in our recap. But Candy is very much of the mindset that what happens in the dungeon stays in the dungeon. And I will say, when those cameras went down, I think many of those women and what happened in those moments, they didn't expect any of that to really come to light again. So everyone's doing a lot of tiptoeing in the after show, but they definitely do spill things to each other in moments that, you know, about things that some of them didn't know about that happened. So it definitely gets very juicy, but I think they're saving a lot for reunion.
Amazing. So we were recently on the podcast Mixing with Monty, and we talked all about the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City reunion. So if you haven't checked that out yet, if you haven't listened to it on her podcast, don't worry. We're bringing it to you as a bonus episode coming out tomorrow.
Okay, so obviously we're talking Real Housewives of Atlanta, Bachelorette Dungeon Party, probably one of the most iconic episodes of Housewives of all time at this point. But what else are we recapping today?
Real Housewives of Salt Lake City reunion part 3 and Real Housewives of New Jersey and Summer House. My God, so many.
I know. Yeah, we'll definitely get it all in because there's just so much going on Bravo. We can't ignore anything.
All right, let's do it.
All right, we got to start with Atlanta.
I'm just going to start by saying that, you know, I love all of our housewives, but some you love more than others, let's say.
Of course.
Kenya, as Basic Instinct Sharon Stone, really made me like her. I mean, what she did in the rest of this episode made me not like her, but I loved that part.
Yes. I mean, she had some pretty good acting beats, some pretty good moments in that where I was like, okay, there's actress Kenya. I see it. And she looked great in the white dress. Let's be real.
Amazing.
I will say that just like Portia, this party might be enough to make me bisexual because these women were making me look like, interesting. Like I kind of felt like Cynthia, you know, how she was sort of like, maybe I'm a voyeur. Like I was like, I want to see a little bit more of what's going on here.
I enjoyed very much watching the girl on girl action. Maybe too much. Apparently, I'm a boy now. Because I was here for all of it.
The ass. Like, I mean, so much ass. Like, we've never seen this much of all of them before.
Right.
I called over my boyfriend. I was like, look at this. Isn't this amazing?
It is amazing because everyone also committed to it. Costume-wise, character-wise. Candy was all in, which makes sense because she has really made this dungeon party part of her brand. So she was channeling mistress all night. But I just love that everyone felt comfortable enough with each other and in front of the cameras for a majority of it. Maybe not a majority of it, depends on the timing of it all. You know, they really felt comfortable in their own skin and being around each other and in this no judgment zone. So I really thought that this was incredible to see in a lot of ways, in many, many ways.
Well, you know, it was supposed to be a no judgment zone.
True.
That's the whole, like, you know, that's the part of this that really gets me is because you're right. Candy went to all this effort. It's to get people out of their norm. So, you know, we're getting rid of your normal clothes. We're getting rid of your normal names. It's time to really channel your inner dungeness and just do what you want to do. Like, let your hair down, be yourself. And I just feel like the fact that Kenya is now trying to get to the bottom of what actually happened, it is violating all of that.
Right. It's violating the rules that Candy had set up to begin with.
Right.
And it's interesting because the night before, during the whole bolo thing, it seemed like Kenya was very engaged in all of it. She was like, bring back bolo. Like, it's like she was looking. And even in the after show, like once you guys hear or watch that, you'll see that Kenya's like, oh no, she really downplays her feelings towards bolo and the whole night of him dancing for them and throwing the dollar bills. But she definitely, from what we saw on camera that night, was pretty involved in the whole situation.
See, I wonder if part of it is Kenny was putting on a show for the cameras. You know, like, look at me, I'm sexual, I'm no one's auntie. But there's a difference between putting that on for cameras and then what happens after the cameras go down. And so some people were actually, you know, feeling themselves and doing all of that, but Kenya wasn't. Does that make sense?
Well, no, absolutely. And it's interesting because I wonder if Brooklyn wasn't there, would Kenya have done anything differently once those cameras went down?
Yeah.
We'll never know, but obviously she had to go up to bed, make sure, you know, she was checking on her daughter. And we know she came down in the morning at 6 a.m. and heard some noises and all of that. But I wonder if things would have gone differently, if she would have felt a little less restricted if she didn't have her daughter with her.
Yeah. I also just, even the way that Kenya the next morning talked about LaToya and Portia kissing, it just felt like so prudish.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Because is she jealous that LaToya was giving someone else attention, or is she jealous that it was Portia in particular?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Right? You know, you wonder if it had been anybody else, if Kenya would have reacted the same way. But, you know, this girl crush with LaToya is very, very present. And like you said, it's a bit childish the way she reacted.
I have to call this out because last week, remember, I was like, oh, situationship, that's so cute, did you coin that?
Oh yeah.
And you're like, no, it's a thing. And then Cynthia says it in this episode and I was like, oh my god, Cynthia knows this term and I don't, and am I an auntie?
Well, Cynthia does have, you know, a 20-something daughter, Noelle, who's very hip and all on TikTok and Instagram.
That's what I need. I need a kid to keep me up to date.
Right, exactly. I mean, Cynthia is surrounded by that with, like, Mike's daughters, too. So I think, you know, she's probably picked up a few things along the way. So it's okay that you didn't. Well, another interesting thing about Kenya in this episode is her and Marlo coming together over this investigation. And as much as it's nice to see their friendship coming back to a good place, I don't know if this investigation is a good foundation to build a real quality friendship on, but I guess it's a start.
This is the funny thing. We were the only two that didn't participate in that mess. I went down there, I sat down, and I saw all kind of...
Girl, I went out there to go put my plate up. Probably like 5, 6 in the morning.
I went down there at six.
So I must have been right before you. I didn't see shit. I heard stuff.
Of course someone else heard it.
You went in the kitchen, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
I mean, why do you say that?
Well, just because what's the intention? It seems like there's a little bit of negativity around Kenya's investigation. She's trying to get to the bottom of something, you know?
I feel like they're actually making up in something that has nothing to do with that. But then it was just like, this is something they can quickly bond over, which I get what you're saying though. Like it's
right.
You're coming together for evil, not good, which
honestly,
that's what I was thinking when they were, because I forgot they used to be friends. It's been so long.
I know.
It does seem like a dark alliance, those two together, because I can't imagine being on the other side of them together.
I know. And the other thing is, Marlo aligning herself with Kenya Does she feel like without Nene in the picture, this is something she has to do to stay involved in the drama? You know what I mean?
But she has Cynthia.
Yeah, she does. But I think when you think of pairs that have, you know, caused a lot of the tension or drama with the other women,
right,
it does.
True.
It did often fall under Nene and Marlo kind of being aligned and typically against Kenya. So it is interesting that she's switched. I wonder what Nene would think if Nene were there.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I just think that it's true when they're both like, I'm tired. You know, like they go so hard for each other and they go so low. I think it is probably exhausting on some level to be, you know, that those type of enemies.
Yeah. Definitely. It has to take a lot of strategizing in your mind, you know, and it just feels like it must be tiring after a while.
Exactly.
So I want to know what you think about these noises that are heard. Kenya is all in. I heard these noises 6 a.m. apparently for 45 minutes, which I loved Candy being like, 45 minutes? Like, what were you doing waiting around outside this door listening to these noises for 45 minutes if you were getting a bottle for Brooklyn?
How you know it wasn't a private dance?
That private dance lasted for a good 45 minutes.
Did you wait outside the door?
Hell yeah!
45 minutes.
Right.
And it does seem like Candy, she's respecting the rules of the dungeon. She's not saying anything either way, but her not saying whether she did or didn't hear noises feels suspicious, right?
Yeah. Okay, wait. This is the part that I'm hung up on. So Shamia hears Kenya talking about all of this and hears her saying, I was hearing noises coming down the hallway. Mm-hmm. And Candy being like, well, you didn't hear them from my room. And Kenya's like, correct, I didn't. I heard them from this side of the room. Shamia then goes to Portia and Tanya and is like, Kenya is now saying that it was coming from the room that you two were in.
Yeah.
But Kenya never said anything about Tanya. She said she heard a voice, but it's like Shamia's the one that called it out.
But that is what I got.
Okay.
I got her trying to say you, her, and Bolo.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
That's true. At least it was only in front of Portia and Tanya. But what's interesting is when they show the layout, which I love that, you know, producers and the editors are really committing to this investigation as well. They show the layout of the house and there's Portia's bedroom, Candy's bedroom, and an open bedroom in this particular corner or wing of the home. So that open bedroom, is that where Tanya had been sleeping? Like, where was Tanya sleeping? Otherwise, was she sharing a room with Portia? So if there was an open bedroom, that's actually smart for whoever was involved, because then there's no way to know who it was that was in that room, because it wasn't like owned by anyone on this trip. So it sounds like it was coming from the open bedroom, which I guess we can assume Tanya was in, and what Kenya should have done is checked Portia's room to see who was in there, if anyone.
Honestly, why didn't Kenya just walk in?
I don't know.
But like, if you're so curious, wouldn't you?
She could have got a little GoPro or something and just like popped in there for a second to see what's going on. Pulled one of the cameras off the wall, you know, the ones that were in the corner that they taped up, just like popped in there. Well, because I think that is... that's an interesting point. Why didn't Kenya just go in or, you know, pursue it in that moment? Because it keeps coming back to, why are we talking about this? The cameras were down. You know, why is Kenya bringing this up? And it raises an interesting question. Is it because there's a cast trip? They're in the cast house. They are filming a show. So even if the cameras were down, is what happened in the house that night up for debate within
right.
the group? Yeah, is it fair game for the cameras? And Kenya obviously feels like, yes, it is. Whereas Candy is like, no, 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 I don't think we should be talking about this. There are even moments in this episode where Candy is like, I think she like looks quickly at a producer. Or she's kind of like very aware of the cameras being present for the things that Kenya's trying to bring up. So I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that it's fair game because it happened on the trip? Or was it kind of understood within this group of women, like, cameras down, we're not talking about what happens after this.
Here's why I think it's not fair game. Because there was an understanding among the group. You know, like everyone saw each other putting the, like taping up the cameras, pointing them in different directions.
Yeah.
Also that, okay, think about certain trips. Like, okay, I'm thinking, for example, Real Housewives of Orange County, the Ireland trip. There was a point where cameras went down, but one of the wives pulled out her camera phone and starts filming. Mm-hmm. There, because like there was this altercation happening in the hallway. But those women still knew they were being filmed, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yes, it's not like Kenya was secretly filming anyone, but she's talking about things that weren't filmed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's hard to say because obviously this comes up a lot. What's fair game? What isn't? You know, like we definitely dealt with that with the Denise Richards of it all, you know, in Beverly Hills. But this just seems to me like a violation of trust.
And a violation of privacy, you know, and I think we've talked about that on the show before. What people are entitled to in terms of a private life versus a public life when you are a reality TV star. And some things should just be kept private and people are all allowed to have that. And I think that was the understanding that many of these women had going into the cameras down portion of the night. But the next morning, Kenya had other plans.
And it really does beg the question of, because we know Kenya's not happy with these ladies, right? Like she has been called out by the group. So is she doing this because she is angry and she's feeling spiteful, or is she, you know, as someone who's been on the show a long time, is she just very invested in making sure it's a good season?
It's probably a little bit of both, to be honest, you know, and I think we're going to learn more just having seen the after show and been a part of that and knowing some episodes to come. Kenya addresses why she pursues this so hard, and I'll be very curious to hear what you think about it when she talks about it in a future episode, because I'm not totally buying it personally. Okay, last question for you on Real Housewives of Atlanta. What did you think about Bolo? We haven't even talked about Bolo.
I want to see what he is working with.
I've heard a lot of things from the women during the after show about Bolo's Bolo, as we were calling it. People compared it to an arm, that there was this, you know, big windshield wiper motion where he just flopped it out in front of everybody. People were questioning whether it was real or fake. I think we landed on it being real.
How could it be fake?
Implants or something? Oh. I mean, I do wish, given, you know, our access to some footage, that we could like find a way to get, you know, the uncensored version of all of this. But unfortunately, we don't have that. So I'd be very curious. But all of the women pretty much have said he was working with a real piece of equipment.
Also, are we, as either Bravo or just as the ladies, are we worried that Bolo's going to speak? Because, you know, people have been paid off in the past to talk about things. How do we know he's not going to reveal all?
I would assume because Candy was responsible for organizing this, that Bolo signed an NDA of some kind.
Mm-hmm. But, that's right. She's really big on the
NDAs. Right, as she should be. I will say that I remember when all of this hit the blogs for the first time, which they get into later on this season, which is really, really interesting. When it hit the blogs and Bolo was identified, I do believe that he made some kind of statement on Instagram, whether it was an in-feed post or on his story, just being like, nothing happened, I had no involvement or whatever. I don't think that's going to come into play at all this season and anymore with Bolo, because I think it really turns into more about why is Kenya so hell-bent on getting to the bottom of what happened in that bedroom.
I just, you know, this is something that I, you know, hope people understand where I'm coming from. Because I'm not saying that I condone cheating. But if this is true in regards to Tanya, I just feel like I love her so much more. Like she has now become so much more interesting to me.
Well, as Kenya says, it's the quiet ones.
Right.
That you got to watch out for. They are the certified freak hoes, I believe are the words she uses. It is definitely interesting. And I don't know. I don't know what we're going to see from Tanya or hear from Tanya going forward, but it definitely sounds like there were three people in a bedroom based on the information and evidence that Kenya has gathered. Fingers are pointing towards Bolo, Portia, and Tanya. We may never know.
We'll know. We'll find out at the reunion. So I got the chance to talk to Real Housewives of Atlanta's Drew Sidora. Obviously, I wanted to know all about this bachelorette party, but we really got into stuff about her marriage, her relationship or lack thereof with Kenya, and what she's thought about this season so far as a whole. Here's that interview. So thank you so much, Drew, for coming on the podcast for the first time. It's so nice to meet you.
You too. Thank you for having me.
So tell me, what made you want to join this wild ride and be a Real Housewife?
I know, right? So I just felt like, why not? You know, YOLO, it's 2020. We had gone through a crazy pandemic. I myself had 3 Achilles surgeries. And it was just like, I never get to really be vulnerable when I'm in movies or TV shows. I'm just playing a character, you know, as much as I love it, as passionate as I am. It was like, people don't get to see the humanistic side, I guess, you know, of things that I go through. And so I just felt like it was a good time to share. And I really wanted to. I really wanted to be vulnerable and be open and do something different.
And are you still happy you made that choice?
I am. You know, it's a crazy, crazy roller coaster, but I love it. I mean, it's done some good, although there's been drama that's come out, especially in my marriage specifically. Like it was some things that my husband and I put on the back burner that I feel like we were able to finally address, because it's one thing when you argue behind closed doors, right? And that's all just between you and your mate. But when you start arguing in front of the kids and then America, it's like, that's a problem. That's something when you need to address it once and for all. And we couldn't just put a Band-Aid on it. So for that reason, we're in marriage counseling. We're committed, which is something we've never done before. And we want to be better. So I feel like in that respect, it's helped my marriage. And then I've made a couple friends, you know, not so bad. I've made some really cool girlfriends. And so the drama is just, you know, I kind of don't think about it much anymore.
I will say you won MVP in my heart for the fact that your marital issues were so front and center from the jump, because I feel like, you know, as a Real Housewife super fan, I can tell you it takes most Housewives' first season is all about, isn't everything perfect? And then you get into their second season and it's like, holy shit, like, there was a lot happening. Wow. So I do love that you both made yourselves so vulnerable and really were so honest.
Well, thank you for saying that. Because sometimes I'm like, do we do too much? Like, do we share too much? You know, like, should we? I don't know. You know, it's one of those things that I appreciate you saying that, because we always are like, gosh, why do we do that? But in my mind, initially, I was like, yeah, we can show the world how amazing we are and how much we love each other. That was my initial thought, right?
Yeah.
But there were things that legitimately happened that I was so mad at my husband for. Like, why would you do this right now? Like, out of all the days in the year, you know,
yeah,
this is when you choose to do this. It was like, it was unbelievable to me. And I felt like, you know, that wasn't what I wanted to lead with. That wasn't what I would have, I guess, chose, you know, to share. But it was really what was happening. And like, he really wasn't here. And I was like, we're about to, you know, start this journey and you're gone. And then, of course, producers found out about it. And it was no hiding. And I was like, you know what? F it. This is my life. Yeah. This is my real life. This is what I've been dealing with. And A, we're going to either stay together or hell, we're going to, you know, get help, which is what we ultimately did. So
I will say I did watch a phone call between the two of you while you were on the girls trip, and you were so mad at him for having the movers come and get all your stuff packed up while you were away. And I was like, that is my dream scenario. I hate moving so much. How can she be upset?
You know, it was like that bittersweet thing. Like, and I don't know, in the past, you know, episodes, if you watched, like, my husband is somebody that's, he is, like, I appreciate him. That's why I love him. Okay, let's just put that out there. That's why I married him. That's why I love him. He is a great guy, right? But at the same time, think about, like, I've been an independent woman. I've been acting my whole life. I've been able to take care of myself. And now it's like, I'm about to do these monumental things with my partner, like buy a house. And I was not a part of that process.
Right.
So not being a part of the business side of things and just kind of being like, okay, and sometimes you do as an independent woman, like, I want to know what's going on. I want to be involved. I want to have a seat at the table. I want to have a voice. And so the one thing I was holding on to is I'm going to move us. Like, I got this part. I got the movers. I got the kids. I want to pack my own shit. Like, I want to make sure we don't forget anything. And so that was the one thing I wanted to be a part of. Like, we're buying this house together. Let's do this together.
Yeah.
So to not be able to be a part of any of it, it just kind of felt like, oh, okay. Yeah, you got me this house and you're doing everything. And I'm kind of just one of the kids almost. That's how I felt. So, and then as I don't know if you saw, but the move was a train wreck. So I just was like, knowing my husband,
I should have been involved.
It was a fail, you know. Like, it took us 3 weeks to move over that period because it was like he didn't do everything in one swoop. It was like, you know, the new owners are like, can you come get the rest of your stuff? There's artwork still on the wall. Like, you left stuff in the garage. They were like bringing stuff to our house, like crates. You know, they're like, here's your shit. Basically, like, you didn't get everything, and I just felt like, you know, I could have done a better job. I know my husband, and I just was like, it was very scary with the thought that he would be doing this by himself with my mom and the three kids. So yeah, I was just like, again, out of all the days, this is when you choose to move when I'm gone. Okay.
So, you know, one thing that our Bravo fans love even more than a real housewife is a hot house husband. Is it weird or flattering that so many people have made comments about how good looking your husband is?
That's hilarious. Well, I mean, I don't mind people. You know, I married him. He's a nice thing to look at. You know, I'll be the first to admit, like, no lie, our first date, he was like, he showed me a little bit of his abs and I was in love, you know? So I definitely, as a woman, I'm like, yeah, of course, you know, you can look, but I do find it disheartening when you cross the line of some women in the circle that will actually, you know, say it and and kind of cross that line and act on it. I feel like that's pretty disrespectful, you know, not mentioning names, but I feel like, you know, you can appreciate, but I feel like there's a line where it becomes disrespectful. So to those people that are like, okay, he's good looking, he's hot, whatever, thank you. But to those that kind of like keep repeating it and in his presence giving him googly eyes, I don't find that attractive. I find that very disrespectful. So
is it cough, cough, Kenya?
That's what,
Who of the group was the most welcoming to you?
I'll definitely say Cynthia, just because I knew her before and she not only was welcoming, but Mike as well. And they've become not only, you know, Cynthia's been my friend, but they've kind of brought us in as even a couple. So they've given us a lot of advice, just even outside of just the show. It's just really genuine. And, you know, she introduced me to the ladies anyway, but she's just always supportive and checking on me. And I just am appreciative of her. And for who she is, she's super humble, you know?
Yeah.
So I love Cynthia.
You know, there was this special that Real Housewives of Orange County did a while back. And they talked about how, on one hand, you're so excited for a new housewife to come into the group because it means, you know, you want the show to have new life and you want it to continue to be good because the success of the show is the success for the housewives on it. But they said the other side of that coin is you find yourself getting really competitive with that person and that, you know, there's sort of this new girl in town and now you're sort of fighting for your place in the group. Did you feel anything like that in terms of like this underlying tension or competition?
You know, definitely not from Portia. Definitely not from the real ones, I call them. they're very embracive, you know, like we like to have fun and it's awesome having that woman connection. We as women, you know, when we connect, it's like the greatest thing in the world. We can have a lot of fun. We can do a lot of great and powerful things together. But I felt and discern certain things from, let's put it out there, Kenya, LaToya, like, you know, I felt and discerned like they just weren't very welcoming and they were always trying to pull it with me and find things wrong and very negative. And I didn't know why. I was like, well, what did I do? I'm confused. But now, of course, watching it back, I'm like, oh, they didn't like me upon me entering the door. You know, I didn't even do anything to them. So that, for that matter, I did feel like that from Kenya and LaToya. They just, I don't know, you know, they weren't receptive. And I don't know why, because I definitely didn't do anything to deserve that. So possibly they were threatened, you know, they were threatened for whatever reason. Kenya, maybe because I have a hot husband that loves me, you know, and is committed to our marriage. And you look on my IMDb, I'm still working. I don't know. You know, I've tried to figure it out because I really thought Kenya and I could hit it off, but she just did not accept me for, you know, whatever reasons you would ask her. But the other ladies, they were just really cool and very open, very sharing. Marlo even introduced me to her makeup artist. You know, like, if that's not sharing and caring, I don't know what is. Portia coming in the house, sharing the tea on the street. That's what I would expect from friends. And those girls have been super open to me. So it's unfortunate that everyone can't be that way. But I definitely agree with what you're saying. It exists. And it definitely exists in this circle of girls.
It does seem like Kenya was having a lot of issues, not just with you on this girls' trip. And as a person watching the show, it's unclear as to why.
Right.
Did you have more insight as someone who was actually there?
I was confused, just like everybody else.
Yeah.
I am someone that likes to own my shit. Like, if I'm messing up, I want a friend that's going to uphold me and be like, girl, you're tripping. You know, you're acting like this. You're not being a good friend. And then I'll always look in the mirror and be like, okay, is it me? You know, could I have said it differently? Sometimes I can be extremely opinionated. I talk a lot. You know, I know that about myself. So I always kind of check and make sure, like, it wasn't intended to hurt somebody's feelings. I love to communicate and put things on the table. But for whatever reason, I was like, well, did I do something to Kenya? But after a while, I was just like, okay, she's not being real with me. She's not telling me anything. I keep asking her. I even took her to dinner. I'm like, girl, what did I do? What's going on? And she just was not opening up to me. And I wasn't sure why. I was very confused. But looking back, I'm like, well, she liked my husband. You know, that could be a problem. You know, that might have made her a little upset. I don't like to speculate, but there's a couple of reasons, more than one, as to why I feel she treated me poorly. And yeah, that's just what I gather. You know, if we come from Hollywood, she says she's an actress. I haven't seen her in many things, but maybe that's a problem for her, not for me. I would definitely be open to introduce her to some producers and things of that nature. But for me, I was open. I was just ready to make friends and meet new people. And that was my genuine intention. And for her, it just wasn't the same.
Got it. So one thing I'm really curious to get your take on as a new Real Housewife, what do you feel is the line between keeping things 100 and letting it all hang out for the cameras? And how much is a, if you didn't see it, you don't need to know about it?
I am definitely a person that's like, if you didn't see it, you don't need to know about it. You know, what happens in the bedroom as a grown woman stays in the bedroom. You know, I could care less about what you do in your bedroom. And what happens at a bachelorette party should stay at a bachelorette party. You know, there's a such thing as girl code. You don't mess with other people's husbands. You don't have googly eyes for other people's husbands. Like, I am definitely a girl's girl that believes in honoring your friendships, your girlfriends, your marriages. I believe in loyalty. You know, if a friend confides in me, I'm not someone that's going to run it back if you're my girlfriend. And that's just who I am. I stand on those things. But if you flaunt it and you put it out there, I respect and honor that as well. But I'm not judgy and I'm not going to go prying into somebody's personal life. Like, that's your personal life, girl. Like, I could care less, you know? Do you, boo? That's my belief.
Do you think Kenya lives by these same rules?
Absolutely not. And that's another reason why we don't connect. Like, you know, she operates completely like on another planet, because I don't understand why she was prying so much and doing a whole day of investigation. We are on a girls trip. Who wants to go on a girls trip and be in court, you know, talking about what you think you heard, what you think you saw? It's just like, if you want to know, go and ask who you think did it. And then if she doesn't tell you, leave it alone. But why are we prying? And this is my thing. We're all mothers. We're all in relationships or trying to fix our relationships. You know, why are we putting things out there that are dismantling and discrediting and diminishing, you know, people's credibility, their character, their careers? I think it's really nasty to throw allegations around like that. Yeah. So I was disturbed by it. It was disgusting to me. And that's kind of what I made up in my mind. Like, you know, why am I trying so hard, you know, to get to know this girl? Like, she was definitely off-putting to me. And it was really trashy to one minute have your legs open and then the next minute be judging other girls for their actions. It's just not fair.
Right. You know, I always wonder, because there throughout the history of Bravo, it's been a common argument about what you show on camera versus what you talk about. You know, don't bring certain things up on camera. When you join a group like Real Housewives of Atlanta, does anyone sort of give you the lay of the land in that way? Or are you just figuring it out as you go?
So for me, I was definitely figuring this thing out. Because, you know, where I come from, I'm used to like a different type of thing. I'm used to a director. I'm used to a script. I'm used to those things. This was like, you're just here, you know, and you just speak your mind. And that's pretty much, if anything, that was shared with me from Cynthia. It was just like, just be you, you know, be vulnerable. You might look crazy. And so I just really was not worrying about how I was looking or how I was being portrayed. I was just like, this is me, and either you're going to love me or you're going to hate me. You know, I can't try to remember what I said or what I didn't say and try to appear to have it all together or appear to be this perfect person. That's too much stress for me. You know, that's too much on me. I got 3 kids. I was like, look, I'm here just really, you know, being myself. And so I really didn't put much thought. Obviously, looking back, I'm like, why did I wear that? Why did I do this? Oh God, the wig. Like, I can definitely join in on some of the things. Like, I was doing my own wig. I could have probably brought in a hairstylist sooner, but it was also COVID. So I don't have regrets so much, but I definitely look back and I'm like, yo, I could have definitely put a little more thought maybe, but I just wasn't trying to be strategic. I was like, I'm just really here, just ready to do something different, be vulnerable, be open and connect with people. But, you know, Cynthia, the most she said, and that was really it, you know, that was the treasure, like the golden nugget, just be yourself, be you,
yeah.
Period.
Is there anything that you filmed this season that you're still sort of like, oh God, I don't know how this is going to come off, or I am so anxious about this being shown?
Not so much like filmed. I think I just wish my husband hadn't left for 3 days. Like, if I could ever go back in time,
yeah.
You know, I just wish that that would have never happened, honestly, you know, because it was extremely hurtful. So whether it was filmed or not, I just felt like that was really hurtful. And that was one of the worst things that he ever did. So I just regretted that moment just in my life and my marriage. But again, you know, he's made a commitment and a promise to not do it again. So I just, you know, am really focused on my marriage. One thing I didn't want to happen is to come on here and it to, as people would say, you know, watch out for your marriage because a lot of people break up and, you know, that type of thing. And I wasn't thinking about it, but honestly, I'm fighting for my marriage now. So that for me was just the bottom line. I just really want to come out of it with a happy marriage, being stronger than ever. You know what I mean? And then also hopefully inspiring other marriages out there. People that are married know that it's hard. And I think at the end of this, I turned around and I was like, if I can inspire other people to fight for their marriage as well, and to show that marriage is hard and this is what you can do. You can go to marriage counseling, find a good counselor, you know, and really do the work. So I think that was the silver lining in it. So no, I don't have regrets. And I'm really not, you know, worried about seeing anything coming out. I think it's cringy, you know, like I said, just seeing some of the things play back. I'm of course like, oh God, you know, the way it could have been better. Yes, I agree with Kenya and Latoya on that one, but it is what it is. But I laugh at myself on that. But honestly, I feel like it was all worth it. And I enjoyed it even despite the fallouts and the drama, you know, it was really more positive than negative. Honestly.
Is there anything that you've sort of learned or gained from marriage counseling that you're like, oh, this is the one thing that I feel like I've gained something from this?
Honestly, the one thing I learned about my husband that was really golden for me was when love said and went back in his past. You know, she made us both go back in our past and basically learning his relationship with his mom and how he ran away from home, how that was his norm. That was how he dealt with him feeling unappreciated, you know, he would run. So it's like, he's a runner. So it was less about him doing it to me, but more about how he programmed himself and what he was doing as he was younger. And so once I understood that, I didn't take it so hard, like he was doing this to me, you know. And then she also drew the parallel that I looked up to my dad and I was expecting Ralph to be like my dad when he's definitely not my dad. And so understanding that our past do play a part of our present and our future, I think was the biggest lesson. And so having more understanding for my husband and understanding like what he said, it was COVID, you know, he was being my nurse through my surgeries. And he was feeling, you know, very pressured, and he reached a breaking point. And so feeling unappreciated because of all that he was doing, and my mom being a part of our marriage and adding her 2 cents, definitely sending him over the edge, I understood. Although it wasn't right and it's not an excuse, I just had more understanding that he reached a breaking point. And what do people do? They do things that they normally wouldn't want to do. They either can turn to alcohol, drugs. You know, he turned to Tampa. He turned to the beach. So I was like, all right, well, this is how he deals with, you know, his breaking points. And we had never reached that. And these were unprecedented times. So I was like, I understand, you know, and I am more sensitive to him needing his me time, because we're still kind of sort of quarantined in a way, you know, so it's still not quote unquote normal life. So when he needs those breaks, I let him have it. Like right now he's at the range, you know, with his friend. I'm like, go babe, you know, have fun. I'm supportive in him needing to get away, and vice versa. Like he's supportive in me needing my me time and stuff. So I think that was like the biggest thing I took away from our counseling sessions. And now, you know, with that, we don't get so quick to anger. It's just like, let's talk about it. You know, let's understand how you're feeling.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that with all of us, because I think it can only help.
Yeah, definitely.
I know it's early days, but I just want you to know that I am already looking forward to you and Kenya facing off at the reunion. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, and let me tell you this, I have a lot of questions because she didn't say a lot of things to my face. So seeing it back, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to address this.
Yes.
Oh, I can't wait to ask her this. So it should be fun.
Thank you so much for doing this. It was so nice meeting you.
You too. Thank you so much.
2021 is looking up, which means there should be plenty of new opportunities for you to grow your business. Whether you're shifting business hours or hiring more remote employees, one thing that remains unchanged is the importance of having the right people on your team. When you're ready to make that next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. And to lend a helping hand, your first job post is free. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with more than 30 million members in the UK. And now you can do this all from your mobile device, no matter where the day takes you. That's how LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person faster. When your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. And now you can post a job for free. Just visit linkedin.com/reach. Again, that's linkedin.com/reach to post a job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Salt Lake City?
Yes.
Part 3. Can you believe that Salt Lake City is over?
Ugh. It's been a journey.
It's over, but perhaps it's just beginning.
Okay, don't you feel like, don't get me wrong, I felt like we got good stuff out of the husbands, but don't you feel like they were out there for like 10 seconds?
Yeah, it did feel pretty quick.
Yeah, it was so short. It was interesting hearing from Justin, Whitney's husband, and in particular about him getting the letter from the church. You know, which I don't know the term that they use, but basically like being excommunicated.
Alex from Hoover, Alabama said, I know what Whitney's relationship with the Mormon church is like, but Justin, are you still a member of the church?
I'm no longer a member, no.
You're not?
I received a letter from the church that said I was no longer
Recently?
No, this was 10 years.
Oh, you're kidding.
10 years ago.
Yeah, essentially. I definitely felt for him in that moment. And as I was watching this scene, I thought, we need more Justin
right.
next season. You know, I've been very involved on Real Housewives of New Jersey lately, and the House Husbands are such a part of that show that I hope we can incorporate some of that more in other shows. And Salt Lake City could be a good opportunity, especially after watching this part of the reunion. And I was looking at Justin. I was like, he's pretty cute. Yeah, he seems like a nice guy. And I love Whitney, so I'd love more of Justin.
Yeah, for sure. The moment, though, between Robert Sr. and Coach Shaw was amazing.
I don't care what she may have said in that moment, and she knows this. I said, you can't talk about people's marriages. You don't talk about what they do. That was unacceptable. And my wife knows I was upset and hurt for that. I said, we can't degenerate to that kind of talk. Not that. You know, and so that's what it was for me. And I apologize, brother. I'm sorry. You know, that's not my wife. That was in the heat of the moment. And that's not an excuse. God willing, she'll be better going forward because I believe in her. And hopefully she gets a chance to at least demonstrate who she really is, God willing.
I've liked Coach Shaw, but now I love him. I just felt like his apology about what his wife said in regards to, like, she, you know, sleeping with her grandfather, it was just such a no excuses apology. And I felt like that was, it was so sincere and just so nice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was a powerful moment, I think, even between two Black men, especially just knowing the conversations that have been happening around Mary and, you know, is she racist? Like, what was she saying last week about, you know, colorism and everything. So I think that was a really important moment between two men who might not normally interact with each other, you know, and whose wives have really been butting heads for a while now.
Okay. And like, you know, this is something that will come up later when we talk about Summer House. But what I appreciated about Coach Shaw also was him saying that when Jen was deciding to do the show, he was like, just putting it out there, I love you, I support you, but I will never be getting involved in your arguments with other women.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that. That is, he's like, you know, that has nothing to do with, because, you know, we've seen it a lot, especially on Beverly Hills. It happens a lot. The house husband's getting too involved in the drama. Yeah. And it just isn't a good look, in my opinion. And I do think that there's like two types of men. There's the type that, for them, it's the same. Like, you know, why wouldn't I have a conversation with this woman the same I would with a man? But I think there are some who are just like, it's not a good look. It doesn't feel good for me to raise my voice to a woman, and I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And I think I like that more.
Right. So I would love your thoughts on this, because I thought that Rob Sr. calling Mary his equal at least shines a positive light on their relationship that we haven't really seen or heard a lot of in the blogs and in a lot of discussions with how people feel about Mary and Rob Sr. So I at least liked that moment between the two of them.
Okay. I am really confused, and maybe it's just me, and maybe this just shows that I wasn't paying close enough attention. I thought she was the pastor.
Oh, she's the first lady, which I think means she could also be.
But we saw her giving the sermons.
Yeah,
and we've never, did we ever see him give one?
No, I don't think so. No.
So like, I can't be the only one who, I was very confused by that, because we've never seen him at the pulpit, right? The pulpit.
Right.
But we've seen her.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how it all works within the church community.
We're not a religious people, Eric.
Yeah, and every congregation is probably different depending on the denomination and all of that. I mean, they call her the First Lady so often, but I guess she is a pastor in that she can go up and deliver sermons and do whatever it is that she needs to do. So is he like the head pastor, or is he, you know, is that what you would call him? I don't know.
Well, yes, it's nice that he called her his equal, although I don't know that, you know, it's pretty, setting the bar pretty low to be like, that's so sweet. He considers her his equal. But
I know it's true. But
they were making me very uncomfortable when the men were first getting out there. Like, their whole vibe, I wasn't understanding. I was like, are you guys fighting? Are you not? And then when he was talking about, I don't like hearing all this grandfather stuff. I was 22 when I married Mama. Oh,
I was 22 years old when I married Mama. Whose granddaddy was I? I wasn't anybody's daddy yet. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. That's very offensive for somebody to say. That's hurtful. But I'm used to it. I don't like people messing with my wife. At all. I'm like that.
Oh, full body gross shivers. When I married Mama? Oh,
right.
God.
Right. Well, I think he wasn't understanding the point of what Jen was saying and what people have been saying. He was still...
Right, you're hurting the
I mean, he might have been 22 years old, but he was still, regardless of that, Mary's step-grandfather if he married her grandmother.
Right.
That's just straight up. Just because he wasn't an older man at that time doesn't change the fact that he was her step-grandfather.
Right.
So I think he was trying to make the point of, I was young, I'm nobody's grandfather, like I didn't even have kids back then or whatever, and that's all well and true, but technically speaking, you know, okay. But, you know, he might have been 22, but how old was Mary? I mean, there's still a significant age gap between them. So even now, with him being much older than Mary, it still looks like, okay, yeah, that's the step-grandfather thing still kind of looks right.
Yeah. I also want to know now, who was in the driver's seat in terms of getting that relationship started? Because we now know it wasn't really the grandmother. You know, it's not like she said it or put it in her will. So
yeah.
Did Mary pursue him or did he pursue Mary?
It definitely sounds like he pursued Mary, I would assume, because we also know from things Mary has said this season that her mother did not approve of this relationship. So,
because she wanted him for herself.
Right. There was some hint at that, right? Is that what Mary said?
Yeah.
I don't totally remember. Okay. So it does seem like Mama gave Rob Sr. the instruction of, I want you to be with one of my girls. And maybe there were some that he pursued that totally shut him down. And maybe Mary was the only one who said, let me think about it. 2 years passed.
Eric, that's a terrible thought.
I mean, I'm not saying I condone this behavior, but I don't know. Because if did he go after Mary's mom and she was like, no, like, I don't know how it all broke down. And I think I said it last week or the week before, there are things we will probably never know,
right,
about Mary Cosby and Rob Sr. and how it all came together. But I hope one day we do get to the bottom of all of this.
The other thing I sort of want to get to the bottom of is Whitney and her dad and what happened there.
I know.
Because did it sound to you like there was a falling out?
I mean, I hate to put this out there, but it sounded to me like a relapse, you know?
No, yes. But it almost was like they were fine, but then something happened. Like, yes, maybe he has since relapsed, but it was also like there was a reason they were already not talking, it felt like. But I could be wrong.
I think Whitney would say something like that. She's been so open and honest so far with her relationship with her dad. I think she would have said X, Y, and Z happened, and then I hadn't heard from him since. But it seems like it was very sudden and she did not have time to prepare. And it's why she is so emotional about it, because there was not one particular thing that caused him to just totally shut her out of his life. But I think that is the behavior of addicts, and that's what happens when you relapse. And, you know, I don't know. I hope he's okay. I really do, because I think we are all very invested in his story this season and in her story because of him. Ooh, I have a question for you. Do you think if there's a season two that Jen will go the Camille Grammer route where
Just totally.
Yes, like taking the back seat in season two because, you know, season one was not a good look for her and she was kind of the, you know, villain of the season, so to speak. And now people love Camille. So maybe if Jen is following a handbook, she's going to do what Camille did.
Okay. Here's the difference, though, because I totally see, I love that idea, and I love the idea of Jen even trying, but I think it would very much just be trying, because at least with Camille, she always had a quiet anger, right? Like, she never raised her voice. That was her whole thing, that, like, the person who loses control, you know, loses. Like, sorry, Kyle, you lost. She always had a quiet sort. I don't want to say evil, but that.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
And Jen, there's nothing quiet about her. So I think that she would give it her best shot. And I think she might be successful for an episode. But then I think the wrong person will say the wrong thing and it will all go to hell in a handbasket.
By the wrong person, you mean Mary.
Exactly.
Oh, God. Wait, can we talk about Mary falling asleep? Which she told you about in the interview, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's like it reminded me of every like sleep deprived college student who like dozes off in class and the teacher calls on them and they, you know, fuck up the answer. But like Mary nailed it. She pulled it off.
It's funny to me, though, because there are two things that people always try to hide. It's if they were sleeping when they shouldn't have been, or if they're drunk. And like people's knee-jerk response is always to be like, no, I'm not. I'm not. It's like, why can't we just say like, oh, shoot. Yeah, I fell asleep. Sorry about that. Like, no, I wasn't sleeping. I was awake.
She totally dozed. I'd love to know who caught that she was sleeping and like told the cameraman like, oh my God, zoom in on Mary. She's sleeping. Like someone caught her and knew it was a golden moment.
I have been in the control room for a moment. Like, was I? I don't think I was there when they caught Ramona sleeping. Or maybe I was. But I remember being in the control room for a New York reunion when a producer said, Andy, can you say something to Tinsley? She's looking at her hands over there. Like, because Tinsley was just sort of looking at her manicure because the conversation wasn't about her. And Andy had to be like, Tinsley, look alive. You know, like you gotta, you gotta still participate.
I think Tinsley was looking at her hands, imagining a ring from Scott is what she was doing. She was like, one day, one day I'll leave this show and be with my man in Chicago. Love you, Tins. I do want to go back to Jen for a minute because I had some trouble following along with her using racism to minimize her behavior. Like, I understood what she was saying, and I feel like her point was valid, but I'm not sure it applies to her situation and the way that she was acting out and treating people this season. Right? I mean, that was like a really tricky, tricky conversation to navigate.
It's tricky to talk about even right now. Like, and that's sort of, that's why it is, I hope she is being genuine when she brings these things up, because otherwise it's a really terrible tactic to use to get to win the argument, I guess.
Yeah.
Because you instantly are putting the other people, like, what could anyone say to that? What could we say to that? You know, the truth is that, like, she was saying terrible things. She was yelling at people and she was raising hands at Heather. Are we supposed to just excuse that?
Right. And if not excuse it, how are we supposed to explain that behavior or describe that behavior in talking about it? She raised her voice. She did get a little physical with Heather. You know, so it does feel like difficult to know what to say and how to describe it, because then when she spins it in the way that she did and explains it and rationalizes why it's harmful to describe her that way, I understand what she's saying, because we've heard these conversations a lot within the last year in particular. So I understand what she was saying, but I don't really know then how I or you or any of us explain and describe the way that she behaves.
Right.
Okay. And lastly, before we wrap up on Salt Lake City, we got to talk about Meredith.
Yes.
Is she friends with anyone but Lisa at this point?
And does she even like Lisa? Like, I know she does, but she just seems so cold, right?
Well, yeah. Do you think it's because her marriage became such a focal point in her storyline this season? And it was not just her storyline in that we saw her and Seth and having their conversations and be separated and come back together, but knowing that the other women were using her marriage as a storyline, is that forcing her to close herself off from everyone but Lisa? Maybe.
But by the way, were they? I feel like it was barely mentioned. It was not a huge, it wasn't like a Lucy apple juice situation where we were talking about it every episode, every conversation. I understand the whole, like, if you're my friend, you're not going to try to embarrass me by bringing this to light. But at the same time, why would you go on a show when you have filed a couple of times for divorce and you're covering it this season?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what? Are you out of your mind? Of course people are going to talk about it. That's what we're here for.
Maybe she felt like she realized how quickly she could have lost control over this storyline about her marriage that she envisioned playing out a certain way on the show. Whether it was...
Exactly. But that means she's the problem, right. Not anyone right. else. Because you're not supposed... You can't control this, you know? And that's the whole thing. Like, you need to show... You need to be willing to show your life all of it, not just the part you feel like showing.
And I mean, she did when she came on our show, she credited the show Real Housewives of Salt Lake City and Quarantine as something that brought her and Seth back together. She mentioned it in People magazine a few months ago. She says the show was what helped them come back to where they are today. So maybe that was in some ways how she envisioned it all playing out. And she's just like, this is my story. I'm sticking to it.
I don't know. I don't want to be a negative Nancy, but I just feel like this was a very similar song and dance to what we got from Shannon Bedore.
Mm.
And, you know, this, it, we're stronger now, you know, was definitely something that was said. And then that did not last long. And I hope they do, because I like them together.
I know. I do too. I really like Seth. I guess we should just tell Meredith for any potential future seasons of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, do not renew your vows.
Absolutely.
It will not go well.
New Jersey?
Yeah. So this episode begins right where we left off with this showdown between Jackie and Teresa. And we get the clarity in this moment from Jackie herself and Margaret. This was an analogy.
I said, it's like me saying, I don't know if it's true, but I heard that Gia was snorting coke in the bathroom. And can you imagine if I did that at Gia's own party? Like, can you imagine?
No. If she didn't get that was an analogy, I can't. I don't know what to tell you.
It didn't totally play that way last week. And I understand that there, it wasn't so clear. I think there was some editing there that just kind of made it seem like, let's just go all in on the shock value of what Jackie is about to say. But it becomes very clear at the start of this episode that it was an analogy. And I have to say, Jackie did try so many times to get through to Teresa with other explanations.
Going that route.
Exactly, with other rationalizations. And she had nothing else to reach for other than this. And was it the right thing to say? Maybe not. But Teresa went for the, you know, only most important adult person in Jackie's life. So for Jackie in that moment, the closest adult person to Teresa at that time was Gia. So yeah, she was caught in the crossfire and it's really unfortunate. And Housewives rules leave the kids out of it. But in the heat of the moment, I think Jackie just had to say that to try to get through to Teresa. But as we said last week, that's not the way to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I know I get really impassioned about this talk, but I just think that Teresa doesn't think that she has to play by the same rules as everyone else. And I commend Jackie for going there, because not because like I think she should attack Gia. I think that what she was doing was, yes, making an analogy, but trying to zap Teresa a little bit back to reality.
Right.
Like, do you understand that as much as you love Gia, as how much I love my family? Like, and what, can you imagine how that would feel?
Well, and what Teresa did was an attack on Jackie's family, and it was personal. It wasn't just, well, we're on a reality show, let's talk about some petty, ridiculous stuff. It was personal. So Jackie was like, I can also make it personal if that's what's going to make you understand how bad it is what you did. So I don't know, but it just, it really was such an incredible start to this season that I can't even believe we still have so many more episodes left. Like, how exciting.
I know, I know.
You know, another thing I wanted to talk to you about is the situation that Jen is going through with her mom and her dad and everything, and how upset her mom is about her marriage and where things are and how her husband has treated her for so many years, it seems. And it's really interesting because, do you remember several seasons ago, I think it was Jen's first season, that they were dress shopping, her and her mom, and her mom was like, stop complaining about your marriage. Like, there's nothing wrong. Like, you have to be happy. Stay happy. It was a very old school, as they say on this show all the time, traditional kind of Turkish mentality of like, you're in the marriage and that's it. And that's how you have to be. Do you remember that?
Yes.
So looking back on that now, it's like, well, why would her mom say all of these things if her mom was feeling this way in her own marriage, like feeling like she wasn't being supportive, that she was being emotionally abused and all of these things. But looking back on it, it makes sense in that her mom was like, Jen, you have nothing to complain about. Like, you have this great husband, you have this great home, you have all of these kids. Like, why are you complaining? And I think it was really her mom, you know, going through something that she wasn't about to share yet and trying to make Jen realize, like, you don't even realize how bad other people might have it. And it was really her the whole time, you know? Like,
right.
Oh, it's so sad.
Yeah, no. And I think that it's also, it's like what you're saying, that maybe what her mom was going through was worse, you know, in comparison. But also, she probably loves Bill and probably thinks he can do no wrong and is like, your husband is great. Like, you don't have to deal with the asshole husband I do. You have it good, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, Bill is great, okay? Bill is a really good guy. He has a good job. He's pretty handsome, you know, tall, dark, and handsome. So yeah, I mean, I get it. But that's not to say that Jen can't also have issues in her relationship, you know? But I think her mom,
for sure,
just only was seeing all of the positive that Jen had in her life and comparing it to her own was just like, that's just not even close to what I've had in my marriage. Which is sad.
But back to I feel bad for Jennifer. Like, that's not really something you should have to deal with your parents.
I know.
You know, like refereeing their marriage. That just seems terrible.
It's such a difficult position to be in because how do you support both of them without taking sides? You
right.
can't really, you know, it's tough. Okay. I want to talk about, speaking of playing referee, Frank playing ref between Dolores and David. Like, can you believe that this is how their family dynamic is?
I love it. I love it. I think it's so great, but like also, yeah, super weird.
All right. But the problem is neither one of you comes out and says in full how you feel, what you're looking for. When you don't like what she's saying, you get up and you leave. That's not right.
No, you can't act Frank, like that. Frank.
Two of you should be able to work these things out, but you don't. And her feelings were hurt that you didn't ask her to marry you. And that's why now her defense mechanism is up, saying, I'm not moving in.
I just think that it's sweet that this is like their modern family and Frank. But I do think it's also like, I would love to have that, you know? Like, I think there's something really nice about, you know, he used to be married to her. He has children with her. So like, who is going to look out for her more than Frank?
Yeah, it's true. And he's going to look out for her in a way that other people won't, because he was the person very early in her life to hurt her, to break her heart, to cheat on her, to do all of these things that in some ways may have conditioned her to be the way that she is today in this relationship with David.
Right.
So it makes sense that he is trying to intervene and show David what she needs and support David and Dolores in these efforts. So Frank has come a long way.
Yeah.
But it is just so interesting. I mean, could you imagine like Aaron talking to Andrew about like what you need out of your relationship?
I can't. I think that would be so sweet, but I actually cannot.
Right. Like that dynamic wouldn't work with everyone.
And I love, by the way, that Frank does this in a not jealous way. Do you know? Like, it's not like the second Dolores complains about David, he's like, well, he's an asshole and you should break up with him.
Yeah.
He's like, he wants it to work. And I think that's really sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't love that they had this conversation at this gun range and there was an awful lot of like B-roll of just like automatic weapons and stuff. But they're guys and they're out doing this stuff. We know how the Jersey guys are. They like to remind us at all times that they are men, and men means like guns.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, God forbid straight men talk about their feelings without like a gun in their hand. Like, they had to do something to sort of to show the masculinity.
Right. But then Frank will go out to dinner later on and order an apple martini. So it's like,
I know, that is so funny to me.
So, you know, it's just, this is why we love Frank Catania. I mean, let's just be real.
Yep.
Going back a little bit to the Teresa Jackie situation, we do see a flashback in this episode of Teresa talking to Gia on the phone. And Gia is very much, I don't want to say team Jackie, but explains to Teresa and gives her advice that, you know, what Jackie was saying was because you hurt her family. She was trying to make an example, essentially. And it seemed like Gia actually understood that it was an analogy and it wasn't meant to be an attack on her or the family. So I don't think that quite got through to Teresa just yet, but it's good to see that Gia understands the situation because she is going to be affected by it regardless now that it's been on the show and it's out there.
Here's the thing. Gia's no dummy. You know, yeah. Like she gets it. And beyond that, I think that she is going to go in the opposite direction in terms of like her mom loves the drama and I don't think Gia does.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a Vicky Brianna situation, an OC. Like it's just a...
Oh, yeah.
You can't have two really dramatic people in a mother-daughter relationship. So it's like Vicky and Teresa have called that role. And so now their daughter has to be the one that's like, just get over it. Okay. Like she's just making an analogy. Okay. It's fine.
You're upset because she said something about me. She's upset because you said something about her marriage. Not for nothing. If you went about it in a way that upset her, then you should apologize. Cause I'm sure you aren't happy when cheating rumors were going on about you and dad. If you upset her, sorry.
Well, it's interesting too to think about it, you know, with you bringing up Vicky's daughter, and we've talked a lot in the last couple of months about Brooks being on Real Housewives of Salt Lake City and whether it's okay for adult children to come into the mix and be a part of it all. But there's sort of these parameters in place, right? That's if you have confessionals, if you are participating in the show as an adult, even if you're a child, does that open you up? Does that subject you to being a part of this drama, to be caught in the crossfire? And I think this is another example of that. Gia is an adult and has been filming with them for, I mean, a long time, but in her adult life, she has still appeared on the show. So that kind of...
Yeah. But also, you know, not we can't confuse the situation. Like, it's not... No one is claiming that Gia was doing that stuff.
Right.
Like, you know, it would be a different story if she was actually saying, well, I did... You know, she was just bringing up her name. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, at a certain point, it's no longer your... I don't know. I guess you can't tell a mom that, though. That's not their baby anymore. It's like an adult.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is in violation of the leave the kids out of it rule in a lot of ways. But Jackie had nothing else.
But the rules are changing because, you know, we've never had adult children before. Right. You know, now they're all grown up.
That's true. They're growing up right before our very eyes.
But you know who would say that it doesn't matter how old they are? Erica Jane.
That is true.
You don't know what I go through at night. Don't you ever say that to me.
I suspect we will get one of those moments in the new season of Beverly Hills.
Oh my God. I'm so excited. Just give it to me.
All right. Should we do Summer House?
Yes. I mean, I just want to talk about that massive argument between Hannah and Kyle and Amanda.
Yeah.
That's like what I want to focus on with this recap. And basically, I'm curious your perspective on it, because as we were saying earlier in terms of Salt Lake City and Coach Shaw being like, I'm never going to get involved in your drama with your friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you look at this argument between Hannah and Kyle? Because I do think it started as like a, you know, people need to clean up after themselves. He didn't say Hannah, but clearly the message was Hannah, you in particular, like have not been pulling your weight. And I feel like he would have totally been in the right because she took it to this next dramatic level. It didn't need to be.
Yeah.
Except that he lost his temper and rose his voice. And that's the part I don't like.
And Kyle has a tendency to yell at pretty much everyone and anyone, right? He's an equal opportunity yeller.
Yeah, I don't think he just yells at women or anything like
right,
that.
But is this where he messed up? 100%, because that's only going to rile Hannah up even more. And then Amanda's going to be stuck having to tell Kyle to not yell at her friend Hannah. But then Hannah throws this thing out about, you know, you might be able to yell at your girlfriend, but you can't be yelling at me. And then Amanda's in a position where she needs to defend Kyle. So that's just where the tornado spiraled out of control.
Oh, Hannah for sure hit below the belt when she went after their relationship, because you shouldn't be doing that to Amanda, your girlfriend. That's not okay.
Yeah, it's out of line.
At any opportunity you get, you talk about my relationship. You're not coming to my f***ing wedding.
So why did he react so strongly when he's like, oh, I've never been jealous of you? Like, why? You know what I mean? Because if someone else were to say that to me, like a friend, I'd be like, what? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that has to be in reference to something in particular. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense, really.
Yes.
Don't be jealous because I sleep more than
I'm
you.
I'm never jealous of you.
Jealous.
I just want to make it clear that I'm never jealous of you.
That's interesting. Well, I want to know your thoughts on... Do you think that Hannah has been a good friend to Amanda? Not just this season, but over the last couple of seasons.
Yes. I mean, we don't really see their friendship outside of this. You know, like, so I can't say for sure. I think Hannah, the fact that she goes after their relationship at all is weird to me.
Yeah.
And I think it's not the mark of a real friend. But Amanda considers her a best friend, so I don't know.
Right. Well, and then vice versa. Do you think Amanda has been a good friend to Hannah?
Yes. Because even the way she talks about Hannah in this episode, and she's like, we have to defend Hannah at all costs.
Yeah.
She was like, fuck Luke. Like, we have to take care of Hannah. It's like she really does have her back.
Right. I agree. I think that Hannah hasn't been the best to Amanda, and Amanda has consistently had... Hannah's back, especially through a lot of the Luke stuff. And I think Hannah can get very caught up and self-involved in a lot of things. And she makes a lot of exceptions for Paige. I think she holds Paige on a different pedestal, and their friendship is always going to be a little bit more elevated. But that leaves Amanda kind of in the dark. And Amanda has really done a lot to support Hannah and be there for her. And we've seen that with Hannah present and without Hannah present. So I did really feel for Amanda in this episode, because I think she didn't expect Hannah to go so low again and come after her relationship, which at this point, Amanda and Kyle are together. They are engaged to be married.
Right.
So you can keep attacking their relationship, but at a certain point, that's going to ruin your friendship with both of them, because it's not going to change because you get angry over, you know, the trash conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, Rose and Thorn.
Yes.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
What was your rose?
My rose was, okay, from the Below Deck reunion, James saying, oh, I'm now getting what... He's like, to be honest, I've never watched one of these reunions before. And now I get that it's just like a total roast. Like, that's brilliant. And I laughed so hard because he must have thought that this was some, hey, we just want to catch up and see what you've been up to since the show.
Right.
And then he gets there and it's like, we're going to show all of these embarrassing moments. And then I'm going to ask you questions about them. And you're going to have to defend yourself. Like, that must have been really jarring for him.
It was certainly jarring for Shane, which feel bad for him. And
he's just a sweet little soul.
Yeah, he's just not cut out for reality. He's not cut out for yachting. I think he's going to find something really great in his life because he is smart and he loves Mother Earth. So just good luck to you.
Yeah. What was your rose?
My rose is from Real Housewives of New Jersey, and it is when Margaret says she wishes she had brought gummies on the girls' trip to Lake George, and Teresa's like, yeah, because it's legal now in New Jersey, so she's allowed to say that, and I just, you know, I love Margaret, and I just would love to see these women eat some gummy bears and just be stoned in the woods of Lake George.
That would be amazing.
You know what? I really should have brought gummies with us.
Yes.
All right, what was your thorn?
My thorn was, it's really sad, but at the end of Summer House, we find out that Carl's brother passed away.
Oh, I know.
And I know we get more into it next week, but it's just heartbreaking to watch him get that news.
Yeah, it's honestly terrible. I feel so bad for Carl and his whole family. Well, my thorn's also going to be from Summer House, and it's like this party that they throw where the theme just appears to be mullets. Was it a white trash party, which also is a bit insensitive, and I feel like you can't do that anymore. But the mullets, I think we got to retire them.
Yeah, time to retire the mullets.
But we will be back with an all new episode next week with an interview with Summer House's Sierra Miller.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me, kiss.